The topic for this morning's shiur is going to be a takeoff on, I think, something that we spoke about 5 or 6 years ago, and we're going to take it further. We may very well answer a lot of questions, a lot of difficulties in the Megillah. In the first chapter of the Megillah, we're told the story of Vashti. What would have been lacking or missing in the Megillah if we wouldn't have had the story of Vashti? If the story of the Megillah would have begun about a king who doesn't have a queen and a search is on for the queen, what would have been wrong? What would we have been lacking? Who needs the story of Vashti? By the way, before I forget, you know, I might very well forget. I can have something staring me in the face. And very often you can have this in Tanakh also, in the Megillah, something staring in the face and you forget. Thank you very much for the shalachmanas. Thank you very much. Very good. Okay. Yeah, very good. Tada rabba. All right. Who needed the story of Vashti? I believe that a number of years ago, we talked about the approach of the Malbim. I hope you have Megillot in front of you. If you don't, then, well, you'll just have to listen. There is going to be another extremely significant point that's going to be made. And this is a point that I have made very often in all of our study of Chumash and Tanakh. And it has to be made with regard to Megillat Esther more than most other Svarim. There's always that feeling that there's something very cute about the Megillah. And a nice story, very nice story. Most probably the greatest insult to the Megillah that was written, Beruach HaKodesh, and is part of the Kitvei HaKodesh, the holy writings, to call it cute. It is holy, not cute. And in order to point out the extent to which there is depth and profundity to the Megillah, it's terribly important to look for key words. In Tanakh, in every chapter of Tanakh, there's a key word. There are words that are pivotal. And all that one has to do is search, find the word, and then see how is it used. Find when the word is not used. The key word teaches us something by its presence, by its absence, and by its position. And I will just recall something that we said some years ago, which in and of itself can be a great cheer. One of the key words of this, I'll just throw out as something that's very fascinating. As you will go through the Megillah, you're going to see that at times the Megillah talks of Shushan, and sometimes it talks of Shushan Habira. Is there a difference between Shushan and Shushan Habira? Of course there's a difference between Shushan and Shushan the capital. And when you know the difference between the two, then you will see that whenever one or the other appears in the Megillah, the precision is absolutely perfect. And this is something that was proven some more than 100 years ago archaeologically, when they dug up the remains of Shushan and Shushan Habira. There was an area of the city of Shushan which was the seat of government. That was Shushan Habira. that was separated from the rest of the city by a river. Anything that's taking place in the palace and all of the surrounding areas of the palace, this was the major seat of government. So there were many people who lived there, but that wasn't the city proper. The city proper was on the other side of the moat. Moat, call it river. And therefore everything, as you go through the Megillah, you'll see, for example, it says, Hadat nitna b'shushan habira. The law was promulgated in Shushan Habira. This is where the edict for the destruction of the Jewish people was issued. V'ho'ir Shushan Novocha, and the city of Shushan was thrown into confusion. The pasuk is perfect. The law, of course, is passed on Government Hill, in the capital, the city. And then it's the mass of population that are out there in Shushan who are the ones that are going to suffer from it all. It says, and here the Gemara was so precise, the Gemara of course knew it, what Shushan looked like, and the relationship between Shushan and Shushan Abira. It says that after Esther told Mordechai, go gather all the Jews together and let them pray and fast, it says, Vaya'avor Mordechai. And Mordechai passed over. In the Gemara, there is a machloket. What does Vaya'avor mean? It's the only place, one place in the Megillah, it says Vaya'avor. You know, people come and people go. Vayavo, Vayelech, Vayakom. People are coming and going. Only once does it say Vaya'avor, he went over. So the Gemara says, a machloket, Rav and Shmuel. Rav says, Vaya'avor, he transgressed. That's Rav's pshat. He transgressed the first day of Pesach. The fast of Esther was on the first day of Pesach. The 13th, the 14th, and the 15th of Nisan were the 3 days that they fasted. And on the 16th of Nisan, Haman was finally hung. But all right. Shmuel says, Vayavar, Ovar, Arkomadumaya, he crossed over a river of water because he has to go from Shushan Habira to Shushan. So I'm telling you, as you listen to the Megillah, be very sensitive to the difference between Shushan and Shushan Habira. In the first chapter of the Megillah, we come up against a word that is of great significance. And that's the word that I want to talk about today. Talked about it a few years ago in reference to Vashti. Today we're going to talk about it in reference to Esther. And there are so many relationships, hidden, concealed, thoughts, feelings that come to the fore simply by watching for the word. And as I said, watching for where and when it appears, watching for where and when it should have appeared and didn't appear, and watching also for its position, in a sense. And that word is Hamalka, the queen. That's the word. I want to talk about Hamalka. Hey, not bad. After reading Malka's poetry this morning, the shir is dedicated to Hamalka. That's it. The word. The word. In the first chapter of the Megillah, I'll show you how it relates to Vashti. In the first chapter of the Megillah, it says that Ahasuerus made this great party, and then in Pasuk 9 it says, Gam Vashti Hamalka, Vashti the queen also made a party. Beit Hamalchut Asher HaMelech Ahasuerus, she made a party in the royal house of King Ahasuerus, by Yom HaShvi, on the seventh day, Ketov Leit HaMelech Bayayin, when the king had his heart had become good with wine, he said to Muhumon Bizzo Charvona Bixo Avakso Zevso Vecharkas Shivat Hasorisim, the seven officers Hamishartim Et Pnei HaMelech Ahasuerus, you know those who serve King Ahasuerus. What does he say to them on the seventh day of the party? Lahavi Et Vashti Hamalka Lifnei HaMelech Becheta Malchut, that Vashti the queen should be brought before the king wearing her crown. To show the nations and all of the officers at Yofya her beauty, ki tovat mar'ehi, because she is very good looking. And then all of a sudden, in Pasuk 12 in the Megillah, it says, Vatimo'ein hamalko Vashti lavo bidvar hamelech. Up until now, she had been called Vashti the queen. Malka, her name is first, and Malka, queen, is second. When she refuses to come, all of a sudden the Pasuk switches, and the Pasuk says, Vatimo'ein hamalka Vashti, queen Vashti, refused to come. Bidvar hamelech, and keep the word of the king. Asher biyat hasorisin, that was through the hands of his officers. Vayikzof hamelech miod, the king got very angry, v'chamato barabo, and his wrath burned in him. What happened over here? The Malbim explains that there was a struggle that was taking place between Vashti and Achashverosh. Achashverosh believed, or wanted to believe, or wanted to establish that he is the king, and that Vashti is queen only by virtue of the fact that she is married to King Achashverosh, but he's an absolute ruler. Vashti, on the other hand, has true blue blood coursing through her veins. She is from the family of Achashverosh and Nebuchadnezzar. Very good, thanks. She's from the family of Nebuchadnezzar. She's from the Babylonian royal house. She sees herself as a queen in her own right. Achashverosh wants her to know that she is a queen only by virtue of the fact that she's married to him. Therefore, when she refuses to listen to the order of the king, the Pasuk says, Vatimo'ein Hamalka Vashti, queen Vashti is the one who refuses, because she is now projecting herself as queen in her own right. Hamalka Vashti. Vayomer HaMelech, so the king said, L'chachamim, Yodei Ha'itim, and here of course comes a very strange story. He calls his cabinet into session, what to do about Vashti. Why in heaven's name does he need his cabinet? Why does he need his cabinet? The man is an absolute ruler. He's not an absolute ruler, because he is indeed married to a woman who is of royal lineage. He cannot simply act in whatever way he chooses. So therefore he calls together his wise men. Ki kein dvar hamelech, this is what the king did, before those who know law, v'hakorei v'lov, and all of them, those who are close to him. Kidat malasot, what's the question he presents them with? He presents them with the question, what to do b'malka Vashti? What should we do with this Queen Vashti, who is now projecting herself as queen in her own right? She has not listened to the word of the kings. So Mumuchan gets up and he says, Pasuk 16, Vayomer Mumuchan lefnei hamelech, Mumuchan said before the king, Vasorim, Lo al hamelech levado ovito Vashti hamalka. It's not only against the king himself that Vashti the queen has transgressed. Do you hear how he describes her? He's not describing her as Hamalka Vashti, Queen Vashti. He sees her, and what he really wants to do is put her back in her place, that she is Vashti first, and she is Malka, she is queen, only by virtue of the fact that she's married to Achashverosh. So he says, it's not only against the king that Vashti Hamalka has sinned, but she has sinned against all of the officers, all of the realm in the king. And therefore he says, Ki yetzei dvar hamalka, when the word of what the queen has done is going to go out to all women, they're going to shame their husbands. Ba'omram, when they're going to say that HaMelech Achashverosh Omar, King Achashverosh had said Lahavi et Vashti HaMalka Lefonov, he had asked for Vashti, the queen, to come, and she didn't come. So therefore, you know what he says? He finally says in Pasuk 19, Im al HaMelech Tov, if it's good for the king, Yetze, if the king agrees, Yetze Dvar Malchut Milefonov, let the word of the royal word go out before him, V'yikotev b'dasei Poras u'modai v'lo yavor, it shall be written into the laws of Poras u'modai, asher lo tavo Vashti lifnei hamelech, because Vashti did not come before the king, no title at all. This is the first time she appears with no title at all, because what Memuchan wants to do is strip her of all of her titles. She is not only is Hamalka Vashti, she certainly isn't, but now she's not even going to be Vashti Hamalka. Vashti Hamalka would mean that she is queen by virtue of the fact that she's married to Ahasuerus. Even that is now going to cease. Her rebelliousness simply will not be accepted. She has been demoted. She's going to be demoted in the most ultimate way of all, because the next thing is going to be, not only will she, the Malka, be removed from her, Vashti is going to be removed. No Vashti, no Malka. Alright. Knowing all of this sets the stage for the next part of the story. And it's going to explain to us, you have no idea, I don't even think I'm going to be able to scratch the surface of all that now becomes clear to us, and I'll show you. The king's anger subsides. His boys, or, you know, the yingalach around the king, decide, let's find a wife. What would have been the normal thing? The normal thing would have been to send out feelers to the royal houses across the world to find Epis, a queen, you know, somebody, a princess, you know, a proper shidduch, you understand? A proper shidduch, a blue blood for Ahasuerosh. That's not what it says. It said, let's look for pretty girls. Do you know what they're really looking for? They're going to avoid anybody with royal blood like the plague. We don't need another one like that. What we want is a simple, unassuming girl without any yichus whatsoever. We don't need another struggle of that sort in the palace of Ahasuerus. Do you know what you can understand now? Why is it that Mordechai keeps insisting to Esther, don't reveal who you are. Say nothing of your family. Because the Gemara tells us, and this is going to come out later, she is from the royal family of Shaul. If he would know that she is from a royal family, he would want to have nothing to do with her. She cannot reveal who she is. And that's why Mordechai continues to insist, not a word. Don't reveal that at all. And what we're going to have to see now is, as I take you through the Megillah, it's going to be fascinating to watch when she has a title, when she doesn't have a title. One thing I can tell you at the very outset, never, ever, once in the Megillah is she going to be referred to as Hamalka Esther. That's out. She's never going to be Hamalka Esther. Because she is never going to attempt to do what Vashti did. That's out. She's either going to be referred to as Esther, or she's going to be referred to as Esther Hamalka. Now, it's not simply a matter of random choice that the writer of the Megillah decided to call her Esther, and then, you know, in order to make things a little different, calls her Esther Hamalka, and sometimes he calls her Malka. Every place, whatever she is referred to, there's meaning and there's significance, and it's all part of the story. What this is going to tell us is the relationships that exist between herself and Mordechai and Ahasuerus and Haman, and how the relationship that she has with Ahasuerus is going to begin to change dramatically, and what this is going to mean ultimately for the downfall of Haman. So let me start taking you through the Megillah. Esther is going to appear. Esther is going to appear for the first time in chapter 2. We were told about there was a Jew in Shushan whose name was Mordechai. Vayihi omenet Hadassah, he Esther, he was the one who raised Hadassah, who is Esther, Bad Dodo, his uncle's daughter. Ki ein lo ov ve'em, she had no father nor mother. By the way, that was extremely, extremely in her favor. As far as Ahasuerus is concerned, we're talking about an orphan girl with no family. It's like a Cinderella story. Taking a girl who has absolutely nobody, nothing in the world, and being raised to the wife of Ahasuerus, this is the kind of girl whom he assumes is going to be docile, subservient. She's not going to cause any kind of shockwaves through the kingdom. This is precisely what he's looking for. He's not looking for anybody who's going to rock the boat. The terrible tragedy of Vashti was something that Ahasuerus did not want repeated at all. So it says that she was a very, very beautiful girl. And Vayihibi Shama, Pasuk 8, when the word of the king Vidoso and his law was heard, that they're gathering girls to the palace, Ubi Kovitz Naros Rabos, and when many girls were gathered, El Shushan Habira. They're not being taken to Shushan. They're being taken to Shushan Habira. That area of the city which is the seat of government. The Megillah is always precise, because it's not just another cute story. The Megillah's precision is of a divine sort. So she's brought to Haggai. Esther is taken to the house of the king, to Haggai Shomer Anoshim. I can tell you right now that in this entire chapter, except till the end, she's always going to be Esther. Always Esther. She has no title whatsoever. Take a look in Pasuk 10. Lo higida Esther et amavet molarta. Esther does not tell her people or her birthplace. Ki Mordechai tzivo aleha shelo tagid. Mordechai has commanded her not to tell. If she tells her lineage, then we know that she is from royalty. Ubechol yom v'yom, and every day Mordechai mitalech. Mordechai is walking lifnei chatzar beit hanashim, before the courtyard of the house of the women. Ladat et shlom Esther, to know how Esther is doing. Umayye yoseh, but what shall be done with her? He knows the fact that this Yiddish meidel has been taken to the house of Ahasuerus is an indication that something is cooking in heaven. This is not something normal that a good edele, frumme, medele may very well be the one that is going to be taken to the to this king, Sonei Israel. Anyway, they describe the entire process of preparation, and in Pasuk 15, Ubahagia Tor Esther Batai Vichael Dod Mordechai, Esther's turn comes, and she's brought, Batilokach Esther, in Pasuk 16, Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus in the 10th month, the month of Teves, in the 7th year of his reign. Vayehavat HaMelech et Esther, the king loved Esther mikol anoshim, from amongst all the women. And she had the grace and favor before him more than all of the others. Vayosim keter malchut b'roshah, he placed the crown of royalty on her head. Vayamlicheho tachat Vashti, and he made her queen in place of Vashti. He's making her queen. But as far as their personal relationship is concerned, she's going to be Esther until. In the relationship between Ahasuerus and Esther, she is Esther, an absolute commoner. And then will come the moment, the dramatic moment, at which there's going to be an entire change in his relationship. All of a sudden he's going to see that she is not this docile, quiet, laid-back little girl, but that there is tremendous strength. Her strength, I would say that her strength is going to challenge him, it's going to frighten him, but let's say. Pasuk 18, I'm in chapter 2, Vayas HaMelech Mishte Godol L'chol Sarav Avoda. The king made a great party for all of his servants and all of his officers. Mishte Esther. The party of Esther. Doesn't call it the party of the queen. Mishte Esther. And then he begins to gather girls again, the Gemara says. He's gathering the second time because he's trying to... He's trying to force her to reveal her identity. There's something, he knows, that there's a gap. There's something missing. He must probably, and this is going to become terribly important later. This man has a secret service. This is a man, and it's going to become even more intense later on. He has people whose eyes are out throughout the realm. And certainly they must have made a check at least as intense as a shopkinter in Bnei Brak would make. Certainly that kind of a, and if he made that kind of a, of an investigation, he knows a great deal about Esther. But there's something about her background that just doesn't, there's something that doesn't sit well, there's something that's missing. There is a thread that he doesn't know. And despite that, Ein Esther Magedet Molarata, Esther does not say her birthplace. Birthplace by Molarata, it means, Molarata over here doesn't mean place of birth, family of birth. Now, you know what happens, while I'm learning with you all the time? I mean, how many times have I said it gets boring already, you inspire me. Look at what I just noticed now. In Pasuk 10, it says, Lo higida Esther, Esther did not tell et ama, her people, vet moladeta, and her family. What does it say now? Precise opposite. The Pasuk says, Ein Esther magedet moladeta, vet ama. Esther does not tell her family, nor her people. Why the switch? You know why the switch? Because what's most important now, what Ahasuerus wants to know is, who's her family? That's really what it's down to. And therefore the Pasuk says, though there seems to be some kind of a threat that he may take somebody else, dump her just like he dumped Vashti. Ein Esther Magedet Moladeta. The family she comes from, she's not going to reveal. Kasher tzivah aleha Mordechai, as Mordechai had commanded her. that Mamar Mordechai Esther also, whatever Mordechai says, Esther does. Kasher Haita Bonoto, just as she was, she trusted him when he raised her. Now, change. Bayomar Mahim, in those days of Mordechai Yoshi, Bishan HaMelech, Mordechai was sitting in the gate of the king, Kotzav Bixen and Seresh, two fellows, Bixen and Seresh, who are two Sarisei HaMelech, two officers of the king, got angry with the king. Vayivakshu Lishlach Yad HaMelech Achashverosh. They wanted to send their hand against King Achashverosh. Vayivoda Hadova LeMordechai, became known to Mordechai. Vayaged LeEsther HaMalka. First time. First time she's referred to as Esther HaMalka. Because there is one person who does know that she's of royal blood. For that matter, at this point in time, only one person, and that one person is Mordechai. Mordechai knows that she's from the house of Shaul, and he transmits this information to her as Esther, who is a queen, because this may very well be information that will be important to her so that she can maintain herself as a queen, remain as a queen, and be a queen at some later point in the future. If Ahasuerus is going to be assassinated, Esther is going to be ace anything. Yes, so he told her, they found out that it's so. All right. They were hung. If I'm not mistaken, in all of chapter 3 is the rise of Haman, Mordechai, intransigent, stubborn Mordechai, refuses to bow, bend, or scrape. Esther doesn't appear once in chapter 3. But she is going to be the main figure in chapter 4. And in chapter 4, we're going to see how things begin to change dramatically. The end of chapter 3 was the pasuk that we said earlier, Harotzim yatzu dechufim b'dvar ha-melech, the runners went out hurriedly carrying the word of the king, v'hadat nitna b'shushan habira, the law was issued in Shushan Habira, v'hamelech v'haman yashul ishtot, the king and Haman sat down to drink. Haman sat down to drink, for Ha'ir Shushan Novocha in the city of Shushan is in confusion. What has taken place in chapter 3, the rise of Haman, Haman's anger, his decision to exterminate, destroy, and annihilate the entire Jewish people on one day, and at the end of chapter 3, the law has already been issued and is now known in the city of Shushan. Where was it issued? It was issued from Shushan Abira. Esther doesn't appear at all in chapter 3. Chapter 4. We have to go through chapter 4. In chapter 4 already, Esther is going to begin to play the great role. The pivotal chapter is going to be chapter 4, because up until chapter 4, the dominant personality is Mordechai. Mordechai, in the first half of chapter 4, he's going to be the one who is going to importune, beg, demand, issue orders. And then all of a sudden, the moment is going to come in the middle of the chapter where Esther is going to begin issuing the orders. Esther is the one who is going to say what has to be done. Mordechai from that moment on until the end of the Megillah. Mordechai is going to be the one who will fulfill the words of Esther. Esther is going to become the dominant one. And that's why I believe the Megillah is called Megillat Esther, as in the poem that was read at the beginning. Not because Mordechai was nice. It's because Esther is the dominant character. She becomes it. She takes charge of the situation. I'm going to read chapter 4. Mordechai yodat kol asher naso. Mordechai knew everything that was going on. Vayikra Mordechai et begadav. Mordechai tore his garments. Vayilbash sak ve'evim, put on sackcloth and ash. Vayetze betoch ha'ir, and he went out into the midst of the city. Vayizag za'akor gedola umara, and he cried out a great and bitter cry. I'm beginning to wonder about something else, and I think I may be right. Shushan HaBira is never referred to as the city. Shushan HaBira is always referred to as Shushan HaBira. When we talk about the city is always Shushan. And that's going to be important later as well. Where does Mordechai go out and cry out? In the city. In Shushan. And then he comes from Shushan, he comes back to the gates of the king. He comes till the gate, but no further, because he can't go into the palace dressed in sackcloth. In every state, where the words of the king and his law arrive, Avel Godol Yehudim, there is terrible mourning for the Jewish people, with tzom ubechi umisbeid, and fasting and crying and eulogizing, sakva eva yutzal arabin. Everybody is wearing sackcloth and putting ashes on. Atavona na'aros Esther. The girls of Esther came to her, vayagidula, they told her, vatitchalchal hamalka mi'od. The queen began to tremble. I want to tell you a rule that I believe is going to emerge. Whenever it's the Megillah is talking about Esther herself, or Mordechai in his relationship to Esther, she's going to be called queen, because she knows she's a queen. She knows that she has royal blood. Mordechai knows it. But when it's relating to anybody else, she is Esther. The girls of Esther are Esther's girls. Batikra Esther Hatach. She calls Hatach, Misalisei HaMelech, relationship with somebody else, the one whom the king had placed before, and she commanded him about Mordechai. She wants to know what is this all about. Hatach goes out to Mordechai, to the city, to the El Rechov Ha'ir, to the main street of the city that is before the gate of the king. And Mordechai told him everything that had happened, the money that Haman had given to destroy the Jews. And he gave him a copy of the law that had been promulgated in Shushan to destroy them. He gave it to him, laharot et Esther, to show it to Esther. As far as Hatach is concerned, she is no more than Esther. To tell her, to command her, to come to the king, to beg, to plead before him about her people. Hatach comes back, he tells Esther the words of Mordechai. Esther says to Hatach, Esther, 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 because here it's the relationship between her and one of the officers of the court. She's no more than Esther or Estero, you know, that's it. She does not have any position of Malka in the court of Achashverosh. In the court of Achashverosh, there's one authority and one authority alone, and that's the king. And she's Esther. But Tomer Esther, Esther says, listen, everybody knows you can't come to the king without being invited. If you come to the king without being invited, then you're going to be put to death, except for the one that the king is going to extend his golden scepter. And I haven't been called to the king now for 30 days. They told Mordechai the words of Esther. Mordechai said, send the following message back to Esther. Al tadami ben avsheich, don't think. Let it not occur to you for a moment that you're going to be able to flee because you're in the house of the king from amongst all Jews. Don't think because you are high up in the hierarchy of the state, your identity is going to remain secret. He's telling her, Esther, you won't be able to keep the secret forever. A moment is going to come at which they're going to find out that the father and mother that you never knew were both Jewish. You're better than Madeleine Albright. The moment is going to come, and you're going to have to own up to it. So on the one hand, you can try and deny and reject it all, and claim that it's absolutely meaningless, or you're going to have to own up to the fact that you're Jewish, and you're going to have to stand up solidly behind your people. Because if you're going to remain silent at this time, God will save the Jewish people. It will come from a different source. Royalty. Who knows whether you're going to have any kind of power at all. Esther says to respond to Mordechai. And this is the Pasuk 15 in chapter 4. Mark the Pasuk. That's the Pasuk, and I remember hearing it not in these words, but I Rav Soloveitchik said, it's here, it's at this moment that Esther becomes the dominant personality. Here is where she gives her first orders and instructions to Mordechai. And from this moment on and further, Mordechai is going to be the loyal servant of Esther, who's going to carry out her every wish. Up until now, the dominant one is Mordechai. From here on and further, it's Esther. Esther says to him, Lech Knoset Kol HaYudim, go gather all of the Jews Hanimtzim b'Shushan, who are in Shushan. Do you hear what she tells him? She doesn't tell him Shushan Abira. The city is Shushan. V'tzumu alai and fast for me, v'al tochlu, don't eat, v'al tishtu, and don't drink, shloshes yomim, 3 days, laylov yom, night and day. Gamanim v'narotai otzum kain. I and my girls, we will also fast. Uvechein ovo ala melach asher lo kedat, I'm going to come to the king, even though it's against the law. V'kasher ovaditi, and if I'm lost, because there's just going to be, there will be no more than a few seconds. It will all be over in a few seconds. If the king does not extend the golden scepter to her, she's going to be cut down and killed on the spot. By the way, this should not strike you as being very strange. We're not talking about somebody who is... he's a killer, all right, but the truth is he is a killer, but that's not the reason for this. We dare never lose sight of the fact, and Esther doesn't lose sight of it, she's going to use it. Never lose sight of the fact that there had already been an attempt on the life of Ahasuerus. And the attempt on the life of Ahasuerus didn't come from somebody out in left field. It came from people who were high up right within the palace. Which means that Ahasuerus knows that he has enemies. And he has enemies in very high places. Why does he project Haman Why is Haman the one to whom everybody bows down and such were the instructions of the king? Because the king has become a frightened, individual. The king isn't going out. The king doesn't go out. The one who is his alter ego and represents him to the world is Haman. When people are bowing down to Haman, it's as though they are bowing down to Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus is frightened. He has become a prisoner of his own palace. He has become a prisoner of his own fear. He knows that there are people out there who want him dead. Esther is going to use this to the fullest. She is going to utilize this in order to turn Ahasuerus into a frightened man whom she will be able to mold and shape as she chooses. So therefore, the fact that anyone who's not invited cannot come to the into the throne room, we understand this. You should have seen those ugly-looking Jewish goons that I saw on the streets today. I tell you, I never saw a bunch like this. It had to be Dan Ramban, it had to be Netanyahu. I just don't know. We saw him driving through Kiryat Moshe, how he got 5 minutes later through the traffic jams in Yerushalayim. Yeah, I don't know, but these fellows were walking down the streets with real ugly-looking guns. That's what he has here. He has a few of his hired guns in front of the throne room. Anybody who's going to come in is going to be struck down unless the king is going to extend his golden scepter. Ahasuerus is a frightened man. There's a price that you pay for rising to greatness over the bodies of millions, and he's paying the price. He's frightened, and Esther is going to use it. Here comes, in terms of the personality of Esther, it's Pasuk 15, the one that I just read, is the Pasuk that changes the relationship between Mordechai and Esther. Mordechai was the one who was giving orders up until now. From now on and further, it's going to be Esther that gives orders. In the next Pasuk, what's going to happen is a dramatic change in the relationship between Esther and Ahasuerus. Because it says, Vayehi b'yom ha'shlishi, and it came to pass on the third day, Vatilbash Esther Malchut, and Esther cloaked herself in Malchut, in royalty. Says the Gemara asks the question, what do you mean, how do you cloak yourself in royalty? It should have said that Esther put on Bigdei Malchut, the clothing of royalty. How do you put on royalty? Carriage. When she stands before the entrance to that throne room, it's not some Maidala Esther who's standing there, but in her carriage you see the dignity, the force, and the strength of a personality. And what word does the pasuk use in order to describe this? Malchus. It's not just plain Esther. And what's going to happen now is a struggle in the mind of Ahasuerus. How does he see her? Does he see her as Esther? Or does he see her as Malka? Is there a change? It's not going to be easy for Ahasuerus to accept this. But she, by standing there, she is demonstrating courage, strength, and more than that, you know what she's demonstrating? Defiance. Absolute defiance. If she's demonstrating defiance, what should Ahasuerus do? What did he do with the last woman who demonstrated defiance? Should have gotten rid of her. Why doesn't he do it? Either because he respects the carriage of Malchus, or his curiosity is getting the best of him. Is something happening that he is unaware of? because the fact that she stands there and she is now, as he looks at her, she is under threat of instant death. It has taken tremendous courage for her to come there. Is something happening that he doesn't know of? Vayehi b'yom ha'shlishi. Pasuk, this is chapter 5. It's already chapter 5. In other words, chapter hey. No, it means therefore that in chapter hey, Esther is the one who now begins to project the quality of Malchus. Vayehi b'yom ha'shlishi, on the third day, Esther clothed herself in royalty, and she stood before the king, Nochar Beit HaMelech, facing the throne room. VaHaMelech Yoshev Al Kiseh Malchuto, the king is sitting on his throne, the Beit HaMalchut, Nochar Beit HaBayit. Why do they have to tell us where he's sitting? Why do they have to tell us where he's sitting? You know why they tell us where he's sitting? Because where he's sitting, he can see the one entrance to the throne room. This man, Ahasuerus, will never turn his back on anybody again because he's a frightened individual. He has his men there at the entrance, and he's going to be at the watching the entrance. Vayehi kiraot hamelech et Esther hamalka. First time that he sees not Esther. Do you know whom he sees now? He sees Esther Hamalka. This is a different Esther that he sees. Omedet b'chatzer nosach chen b'inav. She found favor in his eyes. Is it possible that he didn't really... You know, he wanted somebody with guts and with strength. The fact is, don't people the second time around marry the same one kind that they married the first time around? He married Vashti, however, but watch, you'll see the ambivalence. You'll see how he keeps moving from one to the next. Vayoshet HaMelech LeEsther. He extends the Sharbit HaZahavi, extends the golden scepter to Esther, because remember, One possibility, of course, is that he's trying to, he's going to block out this Malka bit. This is not happening all over again, you know. Deja vu, like this once happened before. No. On another level, of course, we can understand that as meaning, if he has to extend the golden scepter in order to save her, then she is dependent on him. In this moment of the relationship, she's Esther, not Esther Amalka, because her life is completely in his hands. I like the second shot better. Vatikrav Esther. Esther drew close. Vatikrav Rosh HaSharbit. Remember, here she's totally dependent on him. So she's Esther. She's not a Malka. Now, Vayomala HaMelech, the king said to Malach Esther HaMalka. What do you want, Esther HaMalka? Ma bakoshetech? What is your request? Ad chatzi HaMalchut. Be not enough until half the kingdom, and it will be given to you. Tomer Esther. I think that it represents over here how she is relating to him. When she makes a request of him, she is back to the role of little Maidala Esther. Vayomer, Vatomer Esther. Esther said, "Im ala melech tov." If it's good in the eyes of the king, you know, she's really very docile, or at least playing the role of being very docile.
She humbles herself
before him. So therefore, what she's trying to do is not Malka. Don't get worried. Don't get worried. Achashverosh. So therefore, Esther says, "Im ala malach tov yavo amela v'homan ayom ala mishta sherosisila." I'd like you. I'd like the king and Haman to come to the party that I have made for him. Vayomer HaMelech, the king said, Maharu et Haman, hurry Haman. What she is going to be doing, according to the Gemara, what she's going to be doing is, she wants to arouse and awaken the curiosity And maybe curiosity is not the best word. Most probably the word is suspicion. Suspicion. She wants to create an atmosphere in which Ahasuerus is going to think that there's something very cozy and much too comfortable about Esther and Haman, and that there's the possibility of a plot here. According to the Gemara, she's ready to give her own life. Because if the king suspects that there's a plot, the two plotters are going to be put to death. She's ready to give her own life. But what she wants is to create an atmosphere that is tense, an atmosphere that is rife with all sorts of suspicion and fear and anxiety. And she wants to keep Haman always within her sights. She wants him nearby. She's looking for the moment that she will be able to trip him, trick him, and bring about his downfall, and if need be, her downfall as well. She is ready to be Mosa Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. Vayomer HaMelech L'Esther B'Mishta HaYayin. He says to Esther, Marshela Tarviyinot Denglach, Umaba Kashatechat Chatzi Amalku. He asks her again, what is it that you want? Here he does not refer to her as Esther Amalki. He did that before. Second party, he's going to say the same sentence, but he's going to call her Esther Amalka. Because she is going to grow in stature in his eyes. He is going to become convinced that this is a Malka. She's not just an Esteril. And we're going to reach a point later on, I believe it's in the next chapter, where she's going to be called Malka all the way till the end of the Megillah. The girl who begins with Esther as Esther. The girl who now is Esther Amalka, Esther, ambivalent, one way, the other, is ultimately going to become Esther Hamalka. She will never be Hamalka Esther. I think it's terribly important to see each stage, and we'll take another few psukim. She invites Haman and Ahasuerus to the party for the next day, another party. Pasuk Tet in Perek Hay says Haman went out that day happy and of good heart. And then Haman sees Mordechai, and Mordechai doesn't stand up for him, doesn't move before him. He becomes angry. Haman controls himself. He came home. Vayishlach vayove et ohav vavit Zeresh ishto. He calls together his friends and his wife Zeresh. Now I have a feeling it's important to hear what takes place at this meeting in his home. Now, you may think I'm reading too many spy novels or watching dumb sidrot from Australia on TV, or British ones are even worse. But no, the Australian ones are worse. The English just gave me a dirty look. Now, listen to what happens. I'll just take this point. Haman tells them of his great wealth, Verov Bonov, and his many children. Why is he saying this? And the fact that the king has made him great, and that he's been raised and exalted above all of the other officers and the servants of the king. Vayomer Haman. And Haman said, Aflo hevio Esther Hamalka im Hamelech. In other words, in order to point out his own importance, he doesn't refer to her as, you know, Esteril invited me to the party. Esther Hamalka, Queen Esther has invited me to the party. In other words, what's he doing over here? He's pointing out his greatness, his prominence. So you say, take a look, understand? Esther Hamalka invited me. I'm the only one. And also tomorrow I'm called to be with her at the party. I'm convinced that Ahasuerus knows exactly what has taken place at this meeting. Surveillance didn't begin with electronic bugs. There are two possibilities, and these two possibilities always existed. You either listen in, you have your means of listening in, and they did have means of listening in. Who was the first one who was afraid of being listened to? This is a Chidon HaTanach. Who was the first one who... All right, I'll ask you two questions. Who was the first one who eavesdropped? And who was the first one who was afraid of being bugged? Wait a minute. Avimelech is the one who eavesdropped, and he finds out that Yitzchak and Rivka are really married. They're not brother and sister. He had his surveillance out there. When Yaakov wants to talk to his wives and tell them that time has come to return to Eretz Yisrael, he takes them out into the field so that nobody should listen in on him. What has happened over here is the following. Ahasuerus knows exactly what has taken place over here. Is this not enough to frighten Ahasuerus out of his wits? Why is Haman talking about his wealth and his children? His wealth and his children represent his strength. He has people behind him. He has money behind him. Do you understand? Everything is falling into place that this poor, innocent Rasha Merusha, Haman, doesn't know what he's falling into. Can you imagine a report of this sort coming back to the king? Because the king immediately wants to know, why did Esther invite Haman that day to the party? Why does she refuse to tell him what it is that's on her mind? Why has she requested only that tomorrow the same two, the king and Haman, come to the party? That's not enough to make the king concerned. Is there something going on over here? Is there an alliance between Esther and Haman? And then when he gets a report of what took place at this private meeting in the home of Haman, he doesn't know, he's not aware of the fact that Haman has called his closest friends and advisors together, and his wife is there, and he knows it all. Is there any wonder why chapter 6 says that night he didn't sleep? Of course he wouldn't sleep that night. Of course he's not going to sleep that night, because something is afoot, something is happening. And the one who is creating this, And the fact is that she doesn't know the extent to which there's Hashgacha Pratis, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is building on everything that Esther has done. The Gemara says, why did Esther see fit to invite Haman to a party? I can't give you, we gave you a number of them, but there are about 8-9 answers in the Gemara. She doesn't know what to do. She's groping in the dark. She wants Haman close. She wants to create jealousy. She wants the king to think that something is taking place between her and Haman. She wants the Rebbeinu Shel Olam to have Rachmanes on the Yiddish Meidel that has to sit with Azar Grosha Merusha, and she may even have to call him my Yedid, my friend. Who knows what a bizarrein she has to go through to sit with this Grosha. And all of this is in order to build up. I just feel badly. Maybe we'll have to save it for next year. I just hope there won't be traffic jams next year. To take you through the rest of the Megillah and watch carefully. And I think that you have enough of the information with which to be able to figure out when she's going to be referred to as Esther, why it's Esther, when she's going to be Hamalka, Malka, and then it's really going to be only another chapter or two, because after that she's going to be Esther Hamalka throughout until the very end. The point that we wanted to make was the following, a number of points. Number one, whenever you learn a Perek in Tanakh, you have to look for key words, because key words are those that unlock the real meaning of what's taking place beneath the surface. Number two, God forbid, the Megillah is not by any stretch of the imagination a cute story. There's a tremendous amount of profound ideas. This is not a simple story. Again, thank you very much for the Shalach Manas. I better remember next year not to go to Chutz Lartz the week of Purim. You should all have a lovely Yontif. Klal Yisrael should see Nechama B'toch Yerushalayim. And we should, things should start getting better for us. Okay.